The cost of hip replacement surgery in the United States is close to $100,000, but the same procedure can cost just $13,660 in Belgium. So some Americans in need of medical care are opting to travel overseas in order to save money, although the care they get is just as good, sometimes even better than it is in this country. In the latest installment of her series called Paying Till It Hurts, a look at the high cost of health care in the United States, New York Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal writes about the growing cost of hip and knee replacement surgery, which is becoming more and more common, and she looks at the growing popularity of traveling overseas to have surgery at significantly lower costs. I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show, along with Michael Schoppen, who is 67 years old and the main subject of this article. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, and you, Elizabeth, of course.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Michael, why did you feel you needed a hip replacement operation?
Well, unbeknownst to me, I had cracked the head of my femur in an accident, and I couldn't walk anymore. I mean, it took about 5 years, and I finally had x-rays taken, and it showed that the joint had deteriorated so that it was just bone on bone.
So wouldn't an operation like that be covered by your health insurance?
I had health insurance in Washington that was called Basic Healthcare, and it was actually a phenomenal policy, but I had just signed up for it, and it required waiting another 9 months before I qualified for what they considered a pre-existing condition. And I was at the point where I couldn't walk. I mean, I couldn't stand on my feet for 5 minutes. I couldn't walk 25 feet without having to sit down. I couldn't work anymore, and so it needed to be done immediately.
Well, you're 67. Doesn't that mean you're covered by Medicare?
I wasn't 67 when it happened. I had surgery in February of 2007, so it was 6 years ago.
Uh-huh. So you could join AARP, but you couldn't get Medicare. How much were you told the operation would cost without the insurance?
It was going to be almost $68,000.
Elizabeth, are hip and joint replacements generally covered by insurance?
Yes, they are generally covered by insurance, although as we see more policies excluding pre-existing conditions, it's easy to say, oh, well, that arthritis is from an old sports injury. You know, it began years ago. So I think you have to be careful about that if you have a new policy. And the other thing I would point out is, and Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, that $68,000 was the hospital portion. That didn't even include the doctor's fees and the rehab and all the other stuff that comes along with hip surgery in the U.S.
So where did you end up having surgery, Michael?
I went to a small private hospital in a small town in Belgium that I found by looking for the device that I wanted in my hip, which I believed to be state-of-the-art at that point, and found this small hospital called St. Rembert's in this small town called Torhout in Belgium, and so I went there.
Were there other countries that you also considered?
Yes. A friend of mine recommended Singapore. He was a doctor and said the healthcare there was excellent, and I'd read about going to either Mumbai in India or Bangkok in Thailand.
So Elizabeth, is that what people are doing, going onto the Internet and searching for the best price?
Well, I think people are trying to make a healthcare system that isn't working very well work for them. So yes, we got a lot of responses in response to the article about Michael's experience. People saying they'd gone to Mexico, to Canada, to Mumbai, to Singapore, and a lot of people who said, "Oh, I didn't realize I could go to Europe. Now I'm more comfortable with that. So how do I do it?" You know. So I think there are businesses developing around this.
So, Michael, how much did the entire thing cost you?
I always laugh when I say this in an interview. The entire operation, including airfare back and forth from anywhere in the U.S., a pickup by a driver, surgery, blood tests, x-rays, 8 days of rehab after, crutches, all the medication to come home, anticoagulants to come home with, I mean, everything. And I don't believe that I think I neglected to tell Elizabeth this. That also included the airfare for an Advocate advocate to come with me so I didn't have to go alone, was $13,660.
Okay, so $68,000 without all the rehab and everything in this country, way over $100,000, I imagine, in total. And and in this case, we're talking about, what'd you say,
$13,000? $13,660.
And 28 cents. Why was it so much?
Pretty close.
Why was it so much cheaper in Belgium?
Well, I have my thoughts about it, but I think Elizabeth probably has some more factual information. My sense is that healthcare in places like Belgium, Canada, Great Britain, Switzerland, Japan, even are not for profit. They're regulated by the government, and so not absolutely everything is charged as an individual item and then marked up.
But did they treat you differently as a non-resident?
I don't think so. I had the same care. I was in a shared room with somebody. There were actually two different people that came in the 11 days that I was there, and they treated me exactly the same as they did the other patients. I got my three meals a day, and they cleaned the room every day, and the gentleman next to me had broken his ankle, and so he went to rehab, the same way I did. No, it was exactly the same care. It was excellent.
My guests are Michael Schoppen, who had a hip replacement surgery in Belgium and is one of the subjects of the latest article by Elizabeth Rosenthal in the New York Times. She's doing a series called Paying Till It Hurts. This one takes a look at knee replacement and hip replacement surgery and also at what's now being called medical tourism. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, Elizabeth, I do know from personal experience that you get charged a lot more in Canada if you're not a Canadian resident than if you are. But that's not true in many places?
Well, if you were French or Belgian, you would pay much less. I mean, these are prices that hospitals in other countries offer medical tourists that locals would consider really outrageously expensive. So they are making money with these prices.
Well, how are the costs determined there?
Well, as Michael said, in Belgium, and the director of the hospital where he had his surgery was very helpful in explaining this to me, many of the prices are highly regulated. For example, the hip implant, which I think Michael wanted, he'd priced out in the U.S. and the list price was $13,000, huge amount of money. The Belgian government says, yes, you can use, they give you a huge array of choices for which hip device you can use, but say, the hospital can only charge $2,500 for this. So prices are very regulated. And as the hospital administrator pointed out to me, the companies are fighting to sell these devices there. So they're clearly doing okay.
Well, the idea that you hear a lot in this country is that if the government was able to set costs that doctors would make significantly less money and that the quality of care would suffer.
Well, I think one of the things that was interesting to me in this story is that in most cases, particularly in the Medicare market, the orthopedic surgeons aren't making a lot of money from joint replacement surgery. That's true in the under 65. It's different in the under 65 commercial market. But this is not a big profit operation for doctors. But it's really, once again, the way we bill for things. The hospital stay, $68,000. The joint, the hospitals aren't actually paying that list price for the $13,000. They may bargain for $7,000 for a high-end joint. That's still a lot of money.
Do we know how much it actually costs the manufacturers to make one of these joints?
Well, there are a few companies that are starting to make what would be called non-brand name joints, kind of generic joints. And I spoke to someone from one of those companies, an orthopedist, who said maybe $350 in the U.S. Maybe you could do it for $150 in Asia. And, the fear of a lot of the device manufacturers, the brands, is that what will happen, what happened for, TVs and air conditioners will ultimately happen for joints, that will have cheaper products from Asia coming in. Now, obviously, you care about quality control. This is something going into your body. You don't want, a discount joint. But
Were you concerned, Michael, that you were going to get inferior joint?
No. Let me mention two things here, and you cut me off if I'm taking too much time. Firstly, I chose the best joint that was available on the market at that point. It was made by a company called, it was called a Durham joint made by Zimmer, who's based in Switzerland. So, no, I wasn't concerned at all. In fact, there were 2 days a week when I could call the surgeon directly in his office and borrowed a friend's global sat phone and talked to the surgeon. And so I spent almost an hour with him the first time, which is unheard of in this country. I mean, they just wouldn't give you that much time. And then he said, if you have any questions, call me back. And so I had a few questions. I called him back 2 or 3 days later. And after they weren't trying to sell me anything. They were just dealing with me as a patient, and I felt complete confidence. The other thing I need to point out, at the expense of correcting something that Libby had said, is that $13,000 was not the list price for that joint. $13,000 is what the manufacturer charged the hospital. I was going to get that price because I knew the U.S. distributor. Had I not known the U.S. distributor, I have no idea what the markup would have been over and above that $13,000. But that was a wholesale price.
And that's for something that costs $150 to manufacture?
I don't know what it costs to manufacture. And then one other point is that I went to the surgeon, whose name I won't mention. I don't want to compromise him in any way. But I asked him what his surgeon's fee was before I went to the hospital to see what they were charging. And his fee, along with his surgical assistant, was only $6,500. So it wasn't that the surgeon himself was making a fortune on this operation. It was the hospital. It was the billing company. It was the markup on all the bandages, the tubes, whatever was involved in an operating room. It was not the doctor himself. And so this argument that if prices are regulated, the medical profession is going to make a lot less money. No, that's not true. It's the hospital that's going to be making a little bit less profit.
Now, Elizabeth, why are the prices of implants going up if the operation is more and more commonplace? Usually that drives prices down. You
right.
say the rate is 5% a year.
Yeah, the rates of implant prices are going up. And I should point out, to backtrack one second, that Michael got the same implant in Belgium that he would have gotten in the U.S. So there was no quality difference.
It was made in Switzerland anyway, so it wasn't like a U.S. product.
Even more ironically, it may have been made in Switzerland, but it's a company based in the U.S. in Indiana. It is. So, you know, some people say, wait a second, I have to go to Europe to get a joint that my tax dollars in some way help pay for. That's a bit, hard to understand. It's really just the way they're priced, the way this hardware, you know, why do you pay so much for a joint? Why do they price them that way? Because they can, because there's no pushback. And I should point out that even in Medicare, there's no pushback on this, because the way Medicare pays for joint replacement surgery is they will give a hospital a bundled price, say $15,000. The hospitals have to buy those joints. So, you know, Medicare could, it's a huge purchaser, say, we're only, as Belgium does, we're only going to pay $3,000 for this joint. But since they don't buy medical equipment directly, we don't even have that indirect. We have a very, very indirect.
Well, Congress has prevented them from doing
it. Medicare is not allowed to do the kind of bargaining that Belgium does, that France does, you know, where there's the market power to help patients on the side of the government.
Now, we've been hearing for quite a while about how Big Pharma offers doctors vacations, expensive dinners, other incentives to use and endorse their products. Is something similar going on with these device manufacturers?
Well, I had a couple of people say to me that, you know, the device manufacturers borrowed a page from the pharma playbook and then improved upon it. Because there's much less competition in many ways in the device world than there is in the pharma world. These things are you know, I can switch easily, relatively easily, from one painkiller to another. But what you discover is that joints are not just these pieces of metal and plastic. They're kind of a whole world view. So if I get a Zimmer joint, you need Zimmer tools to put in a Zimmer joint. You need the right operating table. You need an assistant from the company, often, who's trained in putting in Zimmer joints.
Even sales reps are present in some cases.
In the operating room, there's also often a tech from the company. So it's really hard if a hospital says, you know, we're not getting a good deal on these joints, we're going to switch to, you know, brand Y. It's hard to switch. You're switching this whole, your systems. It's like switching from a Mac to a PC.
Now, in this country, only U.S.-made artificial joints are approved for use here, even though, as you point out, this joint was actually made in Switzerland for a U.S. company?
Yes, I mean, this joint could have been used here because it's a Zimmer joint. You know, but
we couldn't have used a joint that was made by an Indian company India.
It's very hard to get approval. And again, it's not just there is an FDA approval process, but that is actually much easier than for drugs. But it's, again, you can't just, if you just import a joint and say, okay, here's a generic joint, you don't have the tools for the brand joints won't work to put that in. The doctors may not have the knowledge. Ironically, someone said to me, what's really important to the brand manufacturers is to get their joints into hospitals with training programs, because once an orthopedic surgeon learns to put in your brand of joint, that's likely what they'll stay with for their entire career.
My guests are Elizabeth Rosenthal. She's here to talk about the third installment in what promises to be at least a year-long series in the New York Times called Paying Till It Hurts. Originally, we thought it was going to be a year-long series, but you're discovering there is more and more.
Yeah,
this could go on until...
Until the problem's fixed.
Or perhaps the Affordable Care Act changes it, and then you'll have to do another series.
Yeah.
The latest one is on hip and knee replacement surgery and medical tourism. And also with us is Michael Schoppen, who is in Boulder, Colorado. And he had his hip replacement surgery in a small town in Belgium. And obviously you're very happy with it, Michael. We'll come back to both of you after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Michael Schoppen, who has received a hip replacement, a new hip, right? Got it in Belgium for a fraction of what it would have cost if he had had it done here in the United States. He is one of the main focuses of an article, the most recent article in Elizabeth Rosenthal's series for the New York Times called Paying Till It Hurts. Michael, so tell us a bit about the surgery. Can you describe the procedure?
Well, I was out for the procedure itself. But my understanding, and I'm sure that I'm making light of this in a sense, is I came into the hospital on a Sunday night, and actually, because they do this all the time, I was put in a guest room, not the hospital. I didn't check until Monday. On Monday, I had x-rays, blood tests, and just kind of waited till Tuesday morning when surgery was scheduled. The surgery was done, and what I vaguely remember that day is constantly being checked on by a surgical nurse tech. I don't know how often. I tend to think it was every hour, hour and a half. Wednesday, I was kind of out of it still, but Thursday morning, they got me up. A nurse came in, showered me, and by Thursday afternoon, I was in rehab. Now, I couldn't do much. It was really just when the first day was lifting my foot, you know, 3 inches off the ground, and then 6 inches off the ground, and then finally bringing my hip up to 90 degrees. It's hard to describe what a surgery was like. You're not really out, but afterwards was relatively painful, but by Friday, actually, when I went into full rehab, I was just taking ibuprofen by mouth, no painkillers, no IVs, and just spent the next 7 days going to rehab twice a day. And basically, they gave me one crutch that I was supposed to use, and I just spent the day walking around the hospital, you know, going outside when the weather was decent. There was also a man there that I did my rehab with from Italy, whose health care was paid for in Italy, but the device hadn't been approved yet. And so he came to Belgium for the same surgery that I had, and when he went back to Italy, his government would reimburse him for what he had paid for, because even though the device had not been yet approved in Italy, the surgery itself was taken care of.
Now, Elizabeth, this sounds like the joint replacement surgery is a long, complicated procedure. Is that one of the reasons it does cost so much?
No, I mean, most joint replacements in the U.S., you're in the hospital for 2 or 3 nights.
In other words, less than Michael was.
Oh, far less than Michael was. You get outpatient rehab. So in many ways, he got more support in the week to 10 days after his surgery. I mean, that's one of the interesting things. You find that in these countries where healthcare is cheaper, hospital stays are longer, not less. So, and he got the same joint. You know, what was different? Kind of the bells and whistles, probably.
Now, Michael, did the hospital cater to foreign patients?
Okay, let me back up here for a sec. The way I found out about the hospital was through a company in Britain called Healthcare International, and they directed me to a hospital that they used. Their primary business was taking people from North America, from the United Kingdom, from anywhere in the British Commonwealth, and arranging for surgery if either the wait was too long somewhere else or they still couldn't afford it where they were or didn't have insurance. So, you know, it was very, very, very efficient.
Now, Elizabeth, a caller wonders about malpractice and torts in Europe. Isn't that one of the things that makes medical care in this country so expensive?
Yes, you know, this comes up every time, and yes, malpractice is, you know, very expensive in this country. We need medical tort reform. Medical school is also very expensive in this country. We need to figure out a better way to finance that. But that doesn't account for an operation costing 10 times as much in the U.S. as in almost every place else in the world.
You're right about sticky pricing. What does that mean?
Well, what we tend to think of in most other parts of business or commerce is that as things get older, the prices go down. As there's more competition, the prices go down. What you see in healthcare in particular, and in joints in a big way, is that prices, if anything, go up over time. So it's really counterintuitive. Now, there have been advances. That's true. You know, there are tweaks to joints that make them better. They're now working on joints that will last longer because younger people are getting joint replacements. You know, more people who are athletic, like Michael Chopin, need joints, so they're higher performance. But again, it's not that they might not be worth somewhat more, but this price disparity is 10 times. So what's going on there?
Now, Michael, did they tell you that your joint is going to last for 20, 30 years?
Well, I researched it and I found, and there's some controversy about the particular joint that I took, but I picked what was the state-of-the-art joint, excuse me, because I am very, very active. And so my joint is a cadmium chromium alloy. It's metal on metal, which some people say is an issue. I haven't had any issues with it all in 6 years. And just, I mean, last year I taught 26 days of snowboarding to a disabled population, and got in another 30-40 days on my own up in the mountains. I row, I ride, I lift weights, and I haven't had a single issue with it. And so I'm assuming it's probably going to last the rest of my life.
I'm wondering whether I shouldn't have hip replacement surgery so that I could be a bit more active. Elizabeth, what did the doctors and others you spoke to say about the way we price things here? And what did the people at Zimmer Holding tell you about why these things cost so much?
Well, the orthopedists generally are somewhat, if not very, unhappy with the pricing of joints in the U.S. because obviously that's where patients take out their anger. They call the doctor and say, "Ah, why is this so expensive?" So they are not happy with this, but they have very little individual clout in getting better prices because they mostly don't buy the joints themselves. It's the hospitals that do. Zimmer Holdings, as with all the other, there are five brand manufacturers. I tried to engage all of them on this issue of pricing. They didn't want to talk about it. I visited the town where three out of the five joint manufacturers are located or based. It's Warsaw, Indiana.
Why there? Just turns out that way?
Well, it's kind of an accident of history. It started around the turn of the last century where there was a guy making splints, and then one of his salesmen broke off and started a competing splint-making company. But it's really when the artificial joint market came in maybe 25 years ago that they really snowballed and a third one moved in. It's a little town, 14,000 people, and it makes something like 60% of the joints used in the U.S. So it's a, you know, they control a lot of the market. And so they're not exactly, they do control pricing in a way that would not be possible in a pharmaceutical market where there are dozens of companies.
A listener wonders, if you go overseas for surgery, what do you do if there's a complication down the line? Did you consider that, Michael?
Yes, I did. And it was definitely something to think about. I had asked the surgeon in the United States that I was planning on having, do my surgery here, if he would do the follow-up for me when I came back. And he said yes, that he would do that. And so 6 weeks after I came back, I went in for x-rays and an exam. He looked at the scar. In fact, he was the one that had to take the stitches out. There were no complications. If there had been a complication, I don't know what the recourse is. I feel fortunate that there wasn't. But I can see that as an issue.
Now, Elizabeth, don't female joint replacements cost more than male replacements? Why is that?
The good side of this is that as joint replacement has evolved in the last 25 years, as one former executive at Zimmer told me, there used to be just like there weren't even left knees and right knees. Now they've become increasingly tailored. They're like shoes. There are different sizes. And a few years ago, some of the companies started to make female, gender-specific knees, because obviously the shape of women's bones tend to be a little different. They're smaller. But there's great controversy about whether those are better. And of course, it's very hard in this market to tell what's done because it's better medically and what's done because it's a new kind of sales gimmick. Oh, now we can sell, because these female knees, they were advertised in, ARP magazines, and people would come into orthopedists saying, oh, I want that female knee, like I want that hat. So, is it better? The American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons at their meeting this year was discussing just that. Is there an advantage to paying more to get one of these kind of high, your gender-specific knee? And they were concluding that studies hadn't shown the advantage at this point.
How will the Affordable Care Act affect the pricing of these replacement joints?
Well, unfortunately, in a way, not directly. The Affordable Care Act is really more targeted at providing insurance for everyone, and insurance providers have not proved very successful at negotiating better prices for this kind of surgery. It does include some what's called a medical device tax of 2.3% on all medical device companies. That's of their revenues. They are very unhappy about that. But it was kind of a way that the Affordable Care Act envisioned helping to finance the expansion of insurance. Now, I have to say, you know, there are great efforts both in the Senate and the House to repeal that device tax, which would take a lot of money out of the Affordable Care Act.
And that's because medical device industry has spent nearly $30 million on lobbying efforts just in last year alone. I would think that $30 million would be what they'd be paying in the tax. Why one way rather than the other?
Well, you know, once it's repealed, then you never have to pay it, whereas the tax is an annual thing that will keep on it will be there year after year. I think that part of what surprised me is that when you looked at the sponsors of these bills to repeal to the medical device, to repeal the medical device tax, it includes both very conservative Republicans and very liberal Democrats, that you see a lot of people protecting the industries in their home states, and that's paramount to you know, helping everyone afford hip surgery when they need it.
In your previous columns, articles, you pointed out that the price of this kind of surgery varies from place to place, New York being particularly expensive.
Yep.
Is that true with joint replacement surgeries as well?
Certainly, if you're getting your joint replacement surgery under 65, and there is a great trend, and part of the reason we pick joint replacements is more and more people are getting these at younger ages, so commercial insurance is paying for more of them. I'm a jogger. I fully expect to need a knee or a new knee or a hip at some point in my life. And if you get it before 65, that's when you get into these $100,000, $150,000.
So is there an American Belgium, in effect?
Well, that's the interesting thing. After this article appeared, we started hearing from people in other parts of the country saying, you don't have to be a tourist, a medical tourist in Belgium. Come to our clinic in, San Diego or Omaha. We'll do this for $15,000. And I think what we're seeing is the evolution of bundled pricing and clinics seeing that they could make money by attracting patients from these higher price markets. Now, I will say this is not something, these kind of payment arrangements tend to be for people who are paying out of pocket. So it's not like they're offered if you go through insurance. They're offered if you're paying.
We don't have any time, so I can't ask Michael Chopin why he didn't want to go to San Diego instead of a small town in Belgium. But thank you both so much for being on our show. Michael Chopin, who is a main subject of Elizabeth Rosenthal's latest article in her series about the costs of various medical procedures in the United States, called Paying Till It Hurts, in the New York Times. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.